Today on Vox Talks Economics, is there a link between pensions and how many children we have? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics, so remember to subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. Why do we have children? Well, our grandparents might have said, well, they're to provide for us in our old age. But is this explanation of having children credible? A natural experiment in Namibia, just published as a CEPR discussion paper, tested whether, when a state pension can provide instead, parents decide to have fewer children, and it's got conclusions that might have important implications for economic development in Africa. Pauline Rossi of École Polytechnique Crest and CEPR is one of the researchers. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics, Pauline.
Hello, Tim.
Pauline, our story starts in Namibia in the 1990s. Tell me about the social changes that were going on in the country at that time and the sort of lives that the population that you studied were leading.
So 1990 is an important date in the history of Namibia because it's the end of the apartheid. So before that, the Namibian population was subject to the same rule as in South Africa. So the population was classified into kind of ad hoc ethnic groups that defined what people could and could not do. And the black population was discriminated against. And most black people were either living in townships close to white cities or in semi-autonomous regions that were called Bantustan. So they were poor, they had limited economic opportunities, limited social security, and they had large families. So more than 5 children per woman on average. So quite typical of a situation with high fertility, low development that we can observe still today in many African countries. So I was particularly interested in studying the role of the limited social protection, in particular in old age, in fertility decisions.
The decision, the cost-benefit analysis, I suppose, on whether we have children. I mean, clearly it's much more complicated than keeping them around to support you in old age. What sort of other factors would someone who was living in Namibia at that time consider when they were deciding whether or not to have more kids?
Yeah, so you're right. The relationship between development and fertility is very complex. And in fact, there is a huge literature, not only in economics, but also in sociology and in demography, trying to understand why people would have many children in a context like Namibia in the 90s. And I think we can classify these explanations into 4 broad categories, depending on the level of rationality and consciousness that you are willing to assume in fertility decisions. Mm-hmm. So the first is the fully rational, fully conscious homo economicus that make this cost-benefit analysis. People would have many children because the benefits are high, because children provide support in old age, but also because children help you with labor on the farm, for instance, or because the cost of children are low if you don't send them there to school, if they take care of each other, or if women don't work outside of the house. So this is the first category. But then a second category would emphasize the role of social norms and say that while couples do not make their decisions in isolation, they are influenced by the average behavior around them. And in African countries, people derive status from having large families. Mm-hmm. Third explanation is the demographic transition theory that relates high fertility to high child mortality and postulates that when countries get richer, first child mortality falls, and then in response, fertility falls. And finally, the last explanation is that fertility is not a choice and that birth just happens as long as people don't have access to contraceptives. And of course, these 4 categories can coexist, right? Like the high mortality can explain why pronatalist norms emerge in a group. And high mortality can also reinforce the old age security motive. So if you want to be sure, you know, like 99% sure that at least one child will be here for you and mortality is high, then you need to have many children.
I've seen plenty of research on these other motivations for having children, but much less on your topic. Why is that?
So this is surprising at first sight, because this idea that one reason why people have children is to care for them in old age is an old and widespread idea, right? I did not come up with this hypothesis. But there are very few studies trying to quantify the strength of this motive. So to find out whether this is a first-order driver of fertility or a negligible one compared to all the others that I just mentioned. And so the reason is that this is very challenging to provide an answer that complies with the standards, so the methodological standards of today's research in applied micro. So you cannot do an experiment because of the lag between the time when people make their fertility decisions and the time when they get their pensions. Mm. So young couples today would have to trust that I will be here in 20, 30, 40 years from now to pay them the pension that I promised. And it seems very difficult to build that trust. So a more feasible option is to use a natural experiment, like looking at the introduction of a real pension system that took place in the past. So for instance, in Europe in the late 19th century. But here the difficulty is reverse causality, because in some cases, the introduction of social security was driven by declining fertility rates and changes in the family that left many elderly without support. So what you really want is a setting with a sudden change in pension that is not driven by declining fertility, and with some variation across individuals in the intensity of this change to create some credible comparison groups. And so that's exactly what we have in the Namibian setting.
Yes, what happened in Namibia?
So during the apartheid, the system was highly unequal, both in theory and in practice. So in theory, different ethnic groups were entitled to different benefits, and the whites received more money than the blacks, but also within the black population between, let's say, the Herero, the Damara, the Owambo. And I must say that in our analysis, we restrict our attention to the black population. We don't compare blacks and whites because they were too different in too many dimensions. Mm-hmm. And so within the black population, different regions would have different coverage. And this is because the administration of the pension system for the black was decentralized at the Bantustan level. So in some regions, 80% of the elderly would receive a pension, whereas in other regions, only 30% of the elderly received a pension. And so the system was reformed in the 90s to eliminate these inequalities and to reach universal coverage. And this was achieved at the end of the decade. So in the Pension Act states that all Namibian residents above age 60 are entitled to the same pension. So this is more cash transfer to the elderly and not a contributory system as we have in developed countries. And for people, this made a huge difference because the system was quite generous. The pension was set at 3 times the poverty line. Oh. And the distribution of pension was quite a salient event because most elderly had no bank account. And so to receive their money, once per month, they would go to a distribution point like a post office or in isolated areas. This would be a mobile point going from a village to the next. They would queue there, and then they would get out with cash. So this was an event that was really visible for the whole community.
But for your research, you then have to tie that to the data on how many children the families choose to have. Where do you get your data for this, and how long are you able to track this for?
So the fertility data comes from the demographic and health surveys that are widely used and easy to access. In Namibia, we have 4 waves covering roughly 20 years, so from 1992 to 2013. So this gives us a long time window to study not only the timing of birth, but also the total number of births, so the completed fertility. Mm-hmm. But the fertility data was easy to access. The difficult part was the pension data, and in particular in the old system. So we know from the World Bank reports and ILO reports that since 2000, the coverage is quasi universal. So we know that the extension was successful. But to get data on the initial variation in coverage before, this was difficult. So I knew that data existed because I found a World Bank report using a household survey, nationally representative, asking people about their sources of income. And the old age pension were explicitly listed. So I knew the data existed, but I couldn't get access to the data set. So I went to Namibia to the National Statistics Agency, and I was lucky enough to find the statistician who 20 years before helped the World Bank prepare their report with this data set.
No way.
Yes. So his name is Alvis Verasinghe. He's very old now, retired, but still works as a consultant, and he remembers everything. And so for me, this was fantastic because it helped me figure out which data was available, which data was lost. And that's how I came to the conclusion that the source of variation that I could exploit was the ethnicity and the region.
That is a great piece of detection. But, Pauline, around this time, so many things were changing economically in Namibia. Are you sure that you can isolate the effect of pension reforms in this case?
So with the data available, I can do a diff-in-diff, a difference-in-difference, and I can compare the evolution of fertility between the groups that have always been quite well covered by the pension system and the groups that used to be marginalized and for whom the reform makes a big difference. And of course, the assumption is that all these groups were equally affected by all these other changes that were happening at the same time. And as you know, in this type of setting, you can never be sure that the assumption holds because the environment is not perfectly controlled. But you can only test if the assumption is credible. And so I provide support for this assumption in two ways. The first one is that I look at trends and I show that the changes in fertility precisely coincide with the extension of the system. They did not start well before, they did not continue well after. And second, I can control for changes in these other drivers of fertility. So poverty, urbanization, schooling, maternal education, access to health, child mortality, AIDS prevalence, migration. So all these other factors that we mentioned at the beginning, and I'm able to rule out a long list of potential confounders.
How big was the effect of pensions then, Pauline? And did families actually choose to have fewer children?
So the reduction is by roughly one child. So let's say from six children to five children, roughly speaking. And compared to, you know, the impact of family planning policies, this is much larger than what we can observe. And there are two interesting findings. The first one is that the effect is nonlinear. So moving from a low level of protection to a medium level of protection has a large impact, but then moving from a medium to high level of protection has no significant effect. So when I say medium, I mean at least half of the elderly should be covered and the pension should be at least as high as the poverty line. So that's one. And the second one is that the effect is concentrated at the end of the reproductive life. So we do not find changes in the start of fertility. We do not find changes in spacing, but we find changes in stopping behavior. So women stop having children earlier. And this is interesting because it makes you think that all these factors that we mentioned at the beginning can affect fertility decision differently during the life cycle. And the old age security motive seems to affect particularly older couples who presumably are started thinking about who will care for them in old age.
And this works universally across every type of family?
So we found one interesting dimension of heterogeneity by presence of an elderly in the household. So if young couples live with an elderly parent who receives a pension, then the effect is smaller. The reduction in fertility is smaller.
Oh.
And we interpret this as evidence of an income effect because pension can affect fertility through two potential channels, the insurance channel that we have been discussing, but also the income channel. And in the literature in developing countries, it's shown that a positive income shock is often associated with more children because households can afford more kids. And so when the young couple lives with an elderly and share the pension money, this positive income effect partially offset, but not totally offset, the negative insurance effect.
Now, I think I'm right in saying that not many countries in sub-Saharan Africa have this level of pension provision, and you have quite a strong result here. Do you think that we can use this result to rethink the costs and the benefits of pensions in the region, or even rethink the policies that are designed to reduce fertility?
Yes, so you're perfectly right. That's the main policy implication of the paper. Most African countries have know a very small pension system. And so there are these two policy debates that you mentioned. On the one hand, how to reduce fertility, and on the other hand, shall we introduce old age pension? They are too often discussed in isolation, although the Namibian shows that they are related. And so my takeaway is that the policies, tools to reduce fertility should focus maybe a bit less on contraceptives and a bit more on reducing people's reliance on children by introducing social security, for instance. And conversely, the cost-benefit analysis of pension should take into account fertility responses because they can influence on the benefit side the intergenerational transmission of poverty, and on the cost side the financial sustainability of the system, because in the end those who will pay for the pensions are the children. So the sustainability depends on the size of the next generation.
Well, it's a wonderful piece of detective work. The implications are very interesting and potentially very important. Pauline, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
The discussion paper is DP16358 at CPR, and it is called The Old Age Security Motive for Fertility: Evidence from the Extension of Social Pensions in Namibia. And the authors are Pauline Rossi and Mathilde Godard. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Every week we bring you the most important latest research, so if you want to know what you'll be reading in journals 18 months from now, listen to Vox Talks Economics today. And don't forget to look in our archive, there's more than 100 past episodes there.